Good morning and welcome to the Education Committee. It is Thursday, January 16th, and we will call the meeting to order. Brief reminder about turning off cell phones. Appreciate it. Members, place them on silent. And please do the roll.
Chair O'Toole.
Here.
Vice Chair Porter.
Here.
Ranking Member Reed.
Here.
Representative Atkins.
Here.
Lecca.
Here.
Danish.
Here.
Diaz.
Here.
Fulward.
Here.
Grant. Hudson.
Here.
Grant has been replaced with Representative Coley.
Here.
Representative Hudson.
Here.
McBurney.
Here.
Nunez.
Here.
Perry. Peters.
Here.
Saunders.
Here.
Stafford.
Here.
Torres.
Here.
Zimmerman. We have a quorum.
Thank you. Let the record show that we have a quorum. Two minor changes to the committee. Representative Grant has been moved to the full appropriations committee, and Representative Marty Coley joins us on our committee. And I think that's going to be a great addition with her educational background, and I think Representative Grant has wanted for a while to get onto appropriations. And some of these moves took place as a result of Representative Precourt leaving. So you've probably gone to some committees and seen some shifting. And that's how it's affected our committee. So I wish Jimmy really well, Representative Grant well, and welcome Representative Coley. This morning, members, we are going to workshop a draft language early learning bill. Let me review what we've done since last session for those in the audience who may be first time. The staff collected issues that were not addressed last session, and new ones were received over the summer and the fall. We've reviewed the list of issues and directed the staff to draft language. They have worked with staff from other committees, as well as the Department of Children and Families and the Office of Early Learning. And what we have before us today is a start. Just like last year, we will continue to work with all parties to develop a bill that makes sure children are safe and taxpayer funds are being well spent. In your packet today, you have a summary chart and a copy of the draft. And Ms. Kathy's going to take us through that chart. But before we start that, let me just thank everyone in the audience that has been coming to meetings and coming in one-on-one and adding their advice and counsel. We would not be this far along in making changes on early learning if it weren't for all of you in the audience. You've been very helpful, and we greatly appreciate it. In your packet, as I said, you have a summary chart of that, and with that, we'll let Kathy move forward.
I'm going to work off the chart, members. They do have line references for you. You also have a copy of the draft language, but I think for the initial purposes of orienting you to what's in this draft, the chart is probably the best place to start. The other thing I would say is there are several provisions that we have put in more than one place in the bill to apply to different providers or programs, so you'll begin to see some things repeated as we move through. So starting with Section 1, this changes the name of the School Readiness Program to Child Care and Development Program, which is the name of the federal block grant. Section 2, make some changes so that it is clear family daycare homes and large family daycare homes are not required to be zoned commercial. The Section 2 is with regard to counties, and Section 3 is with regard to municipalities. Section 4 begins the first time you see the set of some changes to licensing. The first time you see it, it applies to child care facilities. We add failure to report child abuse as an offense that will disqualify someone from working in a child care facility. We make a technical change so that transportation safety requirements apply to both family daycare homes and large family child care homes. We prohibit transfer of ownership for licensed child care facilities to relatives if the license has been in trouble, if it's been suspended, revoked, or those proceedings are pending, or they're on the U.S. Department of Agriculture disqualified list, so that the ownership of a facility cannot be transferred just within a family in order to keep a business alive and afloat that's already been identified as a problem. Section 5 is our intent, or the intent here, to provide some direction and assistance to the Department of Children and Families to begin to do what we might call risk-based inspection, so that instead of inspecting all facilities the same number of times, they are able to focus attention more on those who might need additional inspection and offer up a little freedom to those that have an excellent track record. So it deletes an old provision regarding a plan on this issue. It requires the department to conduct abbreviated inspections of facilities with no Class 1 or Class 2 violations in the past 2 years. It then requires them to adopt criteria and procedures for a rule, and then to develop and implement a plan for reducing the number of inspections for facilities that have had no Class 1 or 2 violations in the past 5 years. So this is not so much to reduce the workload, but to give them flexibility and the ability to focus their inspections. Section 6 requires family daycare homes to display their license or registration instead of submitting proof of background screening, since DCF already holds those records. We're just requiring DCF to verify that those records are, in fact, on file and current. It requires substitutes in family daycare homes to meet the same training requirements as the operator. It adds numeracy to the training requirements. And you will see this provision again, adds failure to report child abuse as a disqualifying offense for employees. And it deletes an old provision on a media campaign. Section 7 is regarding residential property insurance. It adds large family child care homes to this. They did not exist when that, or were not a category when that statute was first enacted. Section 8 is regarding determination of eligibility and enrollment for families in VPK. We're authorizing the early learning coalitions to determine which of their private providers can do that themselves, as opposed to having to centralize it at the early learning coalition. So that would allow the provider to collect the birth certificate, the record for VPK, and to keep those records on site with the ELC's approval. Section 9 gets into the first time you'll see these requirements, which is the school year VPK program provided by private providers. It requires all private providers for VPK to be either licensed by the Department of Children and Families, hold an accreditation that meets or exceeds those licensure standards, hold the Gold Seal designation, or be on a military installation. It also requires them to allow DCF to inspect. We have a technical change that consolidates some language around credentials. We didn't change anything. We just moved the language so that it was all together and you could read it and make sense. You'll see for the first time that instructors employed by private providers must be trained in first aid and CPR by January 1st, 2015, and it becomes a condition of employment thereafter for all new employees. Again, adds failure to report child abuse as a disqualifying offense. Then, for the first time, requires child care personnel employed by private providers who either are directly supervising children or are supervised directly by someone else. They must be at least 18 years of age, and in the next bullet, they also need to have a high school diploma or an equivalency. And then lastly, VPK eligibility is determined each year, and it denies eligibility to offer VPK to any provider who has had a Class 1 violation in the last 12 months. And you'll remember Class 1 violations are the most egregious. You'll see that set repeated as we come up to some other provider groups. Section 10 is the summer VPK program in both public schools and private schools, adds failure to report child abuse as a disqualifying offense. Section 11 is the school year VPK program in public schools, and it states that if a charter school is authorized to provide VPK, then that VPK program is under the school district's program as a part of that charter school sponsorship and contract. And again, as failure to report child abuse as a disqualifying offense. In Section 12, this is the Office of Early Learning's powers and duties with regard to VPK. So there are some required provisions of the state contract that are being amended. The first one is to require private providers to notify parents of violations. This would be licensure violations, and to post citations on the premises for a year. It's not enough just to post. They will have to notify parents. Also, to furnish information to parents, this is the VPK program, so to furnish information to parents regarding what's going to be required for health and immunization for their children in kindergarten. Not to hold those records, but just to share that information with parents so they can get their children ready early. And it will require all personnel employed to be trained with developmentally appropriate practices for the children they're working with. And the way we tried to write this was if an employee moves from one age group to another, they have to receive that training. So if I start out with infants and I move to two-year-olds, I will have to receive training on how to work with two-year-olds. Section 13 makes some changes to the Early Learning Advisory Council to clarify that their role is to provide input on best practices on certain things, that the executive director will call their quarterly meetings. They will still be required to meet quarterly upon the call of the executive director, and that the executive director will determine the appropriate staff and administrative support. We have a number of what we would call glitch fixes that came to us from the Office of Early Learning, so you'll see those. The first one is Section 14, revising some definitions, I believe, to bring them more in to comport with federal definitions. Section 15 now is school readiness programs, powers and duties of the Office of Early Learning, similar to VPK, but remember there are two different sections. The OEL has to implement an online training course on the school readiness standards by July 1st of 2015. And then within the contract, again, school readiness providers must notify parents of violations and post those citations for a year. Personnel have to be trained in the developmentally appropriate practices for the children that they're working with. And personnel will be required to complete the training course that OEL is required to develop. Then we have moving some language with regard to monitoring and evaluating ELCs, not changing, but moving and consolidating things so they're a little easier to read and understand, and fixing a cross-reference. And item 16 was a request from the Office of Early Learning to authorize early learning coalitions to add up to two optional members, as long as they don't go over 30. Section 17 is the Early Learning Coalition powers and duties with regard to school readiness. And there's a glitch fix. I knew I was going to say that. I tried so hard yesterday to practice that. And I just said, I'm just going to say fix. There's a fix. they can waive copayments for families that have experienced disasters like hurricanes, that sort of thing, just to clarify that it would be for those folks who are at or below the federal poverty level. Section 18, multiple fixes. OEL had asked that we grant siblings participation in school readiness up through age 13. We put in the bill up through age 11, which would take them through the end of sixth grade. Also, that parents must complete an application, and ELCs have to make sure parents know when children are no longer eligible. or are disenrolled. Section 19 now would be school readiness program providers. You'll see some things repeated here. A school readiness provider must either be licensed, a public school, or hold accreditation that meets or exceeds DCF licensure. They have to submit to DCF inspections. There's a fix regarding liability insurance coverage to make sure that, I believe it's an equitable application across the providers. You'll see again, child care personnel directly working with children must be 18 years of age and have a diploma unless they are under someone else's direct supervision. And that personnel must be trained in first aid and CPR by January 1 and a hiring requirement after January 1, 2015. For school readiness program funding, which is under the purview of Chair Fresen's committee, we did make a few changes working with his staff. They may make more. Some fixes that OEL requested, some revisions for quality activities that coalitions can work on, including focusing on informing parents as public outreach, and then authorizing the OEL to provide assistance for training and funds for training, technical assistance, and grants. For the Section 21 investigations of fraud and overpayment, current law just says providers. We added individuals to that, so it's individuals and providers on the disqualified list. With regard to the Child Care Executive Program, they will no longer be required to have a task force for every purchasing pool. They could have one. And the Office of Early Learning is authorized to hire a general counsel and an inspector general. That's the summary, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, members, many of you are recognizing things that you sent to me that you wanted in this bill. But what I'd like to ask you to do now is to give this an in-depth look. See what you think needs to be changed. Now, some of you have already given me some real good detailed information. I think Representative Saunders has my office bugged because his recommendations came in and he had just about every single one we had in the workshop bill. So we're either on the very same track or he's got my office bugged, one or the other. But thank you. Yeah. And thank all of you that have gone out and looked at these places to make these recommendations. Thank the early learning coalitions and the many daycare providers that allowed us to come in and look. And they also gave us things that they think need to be fixed. So I think, you know, it looks as thorough as I can get it at this point. You've got time to go back and look, make sure that we've given enough time. This change to 18 is effective 2016. That's two full years. In terms of feeling strongly about that, I do. I want to help young people get to that next level of employment in these places and earn that next dollar that they can earn. And at 16, with no education, you cannot progress. And so while we want, while we want to take care of children, we also want to take care of those who take care of children. So that's why we gave them 2 years. The early learning coalitions, the many that I went to, said, look, we have computers here. We find out information also on the moms and the dads that drop off children, what their education level is, and anyone that wants to take courses, we may be able to work it out so that they can take them. I believe our library system is willing. They have taken on new responsibilities. As an example, if you want to fill out unemployment compensation or you need to do something with Social Security and you don't have a computer, you can walk into the libraries, and all of those things are online. So this is another opportunity I would like to address with the libraries to say, could you make available equipment so that both the parents who don't have education and the people who are working with these children don't have an education could do some online training at no cost. So as you look at that, we did try to provide a good length of time on that. I think at this time, what I'm asking you to do is go back, look at it, initial anything, make any changes. Failure to see anything from you means you must be in total agreement with me. So if you want changes to happen, you got to give them back to me. Otherwise, I make the assumption you're all good, and we will proceed with making the bill. Same offer extends outside this dais. If you have things in here that think could make it better, There are things in here that you think are harmful, whatever. You've got to get them back to Jason. We've made that offer. Isn't it Jason you want to have that? Right, Jason? And I think you probably all have Jason's email. I know you all know where his office is because I see you stacked up out there quite frequently. So, and that's good. That's a good thing.
They'd like to know when.
We got the next 2 weeks off, so the day you return, you should have it done by then. That gives us time going into the February meetings to do some more work with that bill. Because my goal on voting on this bill is probably going to be February 10th. But that doesn't mean to give me your changes on February 9th. That means to give them to me by the end of January so that we can do thoughtful review and try to get these done. At this point, I think, do we have any appearance cards from anyone in the audience? Does everyone in the audience have a copy of this bill? If you need them, you know where to come and get them so that we can show you what the bill will look like. What else did I have? Look at this. Look at the time, folks. I'll have half of you on the road by 9:45. Any questions or comments from the staff?
From the members.
From the members. Members. I know staff. Any members have any questions on any of the material you saw today? Representative Saunders, you recognize?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I'm really excited about the bill. I just wanted to share that. For those of you in the public, some of you who I've been working with on this, I had a chance to share some recommendations, the ones that the Chair mentioned, but a lot of what I had hoped we were going to do around health and safety is in the bill, and I'm really excited about that. Some of the things that I do love, I just wanted to say out loud, were I love the child abuse provisions, the way that we souped that up. I heard that from a lot of different providers. I went to three different early learning coalitions, including Pinellas County with Representative Peters, and I heard that in almost every county. I think that the standard, and I believe we're getting there in this bill, should be that if you receive public dollars, that you meet the standards of licensure. Whether you're actually licensed or you're meeting those standards, I think it's the distinction without a difference that we find in this bill a little bit, but I think that's the right direction to go. I have some questions about Gold Seal, which we can talk about offline, because that's one of the pathways to meeting those standards, and I don't know enough about Gold Seal. I love the 18 provision. I love the high school provision. I think that's really strong. And I guess I would just throw out questions for us all to stew on is there's language in the bill, I think, that says that if that that empowers after class one violations in the early learning coalition to pull a contract and deny funding. In other words, if you're a bad actor and you show that really egregiously, we shouldn't give you more dollars. I wonder if there's a threshold for repeated less serious violations. Like if in some frequency of time, if you're a repeated class two violator, that also shouldn't be a threshold we could build into the contract. And so I just wanted to share that. And then one third thing to ponder. I couldn't come up with a real policy solution for this, but I did, I think, identify a problem, which is that a lot of ELCs were sharing that there will be providers out there who will do really egregious things, be on the road to closure or be closed, simply shut down their LLC, move down the street, start a new LLC, and all of a sudden the public dollars start flowing again. So I don't have a solution for that. I just think it's a problem worth addressing, and I thought it's worth throwing out to the committee. But I'm really excited about this bill. I think it's doing really cool things, and I want to thank you and Representative Peters again for working with me on putting some recommendations together.
Thank you. Shan, did I see you nodding on one of his questions about going over to another place? I see you nodding. You agree with that idea, or you already do it? Come on up. You hear what they said? That's what you get for nodding.
Sitting in the front, that was fine.
Front? The whole front is empty.
Close enough to the front. Thank you, Madam Chair. Absolutely. We were looking at some of those instances as well, and Debbie Russo from DCF and I think the current bill language closes some of those loopholes, specifically with fraud, but we could take a look at where maybe that same language can be used to prevent exactly the circumstance you described.
All right. Thank you. You know, there was a time when we first started this early learning thing that fraud was all over the place, people were all up and on. Look how far we've come.
Yes.
And thank you to you and your staff. You've been doing some great work, and thanks to Debbie Russo as well for the work she does at DCF, because without you all, this wouldn't happen, and these babies, in some cases, would not be in a safe place. I appreciate it. Representative Atkins, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I have just a couple of questions. Under Section 5, where the third bullet requires DCF to adopt criteria and procedures for abbreviated inspections in rule, can we have a little bit better explanation of what that does?
The intent is to give them rulemaking authority to establish situations in which they might inspect for fewer items or for a shorter period of time. But we're going to be working next week with Debbie Russo and Shan Goff to really make sure we've nailed down the specifics appropriately. So if you we'll get you, you can read that language, but then we'll get you any changes that we make.
Madam Chair.
You recognize.
So just to clarify then, by having DCF put adopt the criteria and the procedures for how they're going to conduct these inspections, that would allow for greater standardization of how these inspections are actually conducted. Is that correct?
That's the intent. And also to, again, if a provider has a long-standing positive track record, mm-hmm. to give the department the opportunity to tell everybody what the rules will be around shorter inspections for those facilities. And then the other piece of this is to actually reduce the number of inspections, not just an abbreviated one, but also the number, again, for folks who have a long-standing good track record.
Follow up?
Let me just comment. I think that's an excellent idea. I think it's important that any provider be able to know when an inspector comes in, what's going to be done, how that inspection is going to be carried out, so that they can, so there's standardization among that. I had a question about the inspections for the non-licensed mm-hmm. providers. Generally, the way I understand it works is when you go for your relicensure, there's a relicensure fee associated with that, and that covers at least in part the cost of that inspection. And so the provision that would require an inspection, regardless of whether you're licensed or not, maybe through the gold seal or through the accreditation process, is there anticipated to be an inspection fee, or has that been considered?
We didn't discuss that, so that's a really good question for us to work on.
And I would add to that that normally, you know, the drill is this PCB will be looked at through appropriations for any fiscal impacts, either up or down. And so we will be doing that.
Just one final comment. I love the idea of the online training that's available. You know, when you look at the need to train employees, making it easy, making it so that they can access that in their off hours, in the evenings, in the weekends, and even holidays, being able to do that, I think, is a very modernized concept, and I applaud you for including that in this PCP.
Thank you. You know, there's so much online learning. Lassinger Center has been working with OEL and working with K-12 for online training for both teachers. So now if we could just come up with a real simple way for young people to take their training to better themselves, the better off we'll be. Any other questions? Representative Hudson, you recognize?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to make a suggestion to Representative Saunders' questions with the ones that open up and close down and maybe open up close down the road. We had the same problem in the construction industry with contractors, subcontractors, and what we've done as a remedy is try to tie the LLC or the license to a person's name. So when they do close down, if they try and open back up under the same first name, last name, it kind of pops up as a red flag. So if staff maybe want to look into that and maybe mirror something like that, that might be a good suggestion.
Very good. Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Anyone in the audience? Anybody wishing to speak? Yes? No? All right. They're all trying to get away from me. That's what it is. Well, members, this is the last meeting we'll have until February. When February comes, we're looking at having, hopefully, an update from Commissioner Stewart on K-12 issues. She's hoping to be at our meeting. However, this is subject to change, obviously, as she goes down the road. On February 10th, we'll be trying to vote on this bill and any other bills that may be coming our way. I know some of you have been to see me on bills, and we'll try to bring them up on the 10th of February. All right? And then on the 17th, any other subcommittee PCBs that will be ready will come to the full committee. So hopefully we'll have all those done. And then we can go home again. So it looks to be a pretty busy February 3rd, 10th, and 17th. So rest up over the next 2 weeks. Have a safe journey home. This meeting concludes, and Representative Peters moves we rise.